Okay, please help me welcome our speaker tonight is Mike from Conshohocken. He's a member of the North Wales Group.
Tom, do you want me to pace it outward or?
Okay.
All right. Whew. I haven't sat in a lectern since my eighth grade graduation, I think. That's what you call it, a lectern, right? My name's Mike, I'm an alcoholic. You know, I love that set aside prayer, because, you know, the longer that I stay sober, like I learned that I don't have all the answers, you know. You and everybody else told me, and I stopped trying to figure this out. You know, I have to remain open-minded, through it all. But, you know, like I said, Mike, I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the North Wales Group. They meet Tuesday, at the Church of the Messiah. Those people saved my life. You know, I got around a great group of people that, just really kept it simple. You know, taught me to stay with the pack. And we, you know, we just went to different meetings and all just stayed connected with each other. But, what it was like. I grew up outside Philadelphia, family of four, older sister, my mom, growing up had a lot of substance abuse and, mental health problems. So that made for a fun growing up experience. You know, that chaos early on, you know, it's all I knew. A lot of fighting went on at the house, a lot, you know, her with my dad, nothing, you know, physical, a lot of verbal, cops coming to the house, you know, it just became normal. You know, when I'd see the cops show up, it got so bad that, you know, I can laugh about it now, you know, but it was so easy to just forget for so long. And, you know, I laugh about it now, but it got so much to the point where the cops had to basically tell her to stop calling, basically. Like, I've never heard of that happening. You know, that was growing up. They separated when I was five. I lived with her, and my dad moved not too far away and did the joint custody thing. You know, I'd have a couple school nights with him, and then every other weekend. My sister lived at the house still temporarily. But even then, you know, I definitely, you know, looking back, like I heard a speaker last week talk about this unease feeling like early on in their childhood. And, you know, I didn't know what it was, but like, you know, looking back, I definitely had that fear and anxiety early on, like, growing up. You know, I'd have these like vivid memories of, you know, we had these hardwood floors and like I'd hear her, you know, coming down the steps about to open the door to my room. And I just didn't know what to expect. Like each day was something different. Each time of the day was something different. I didn't know what version of her I was going to get. So it just made for, you know, just real hard growing up. And, you know, I like to say also that's when I, you know, really started to hone my isolation skills, because, you know, she kept to herself in her room. I kept to myself, and that's all I knew at that point. I would, invite myself over to friends' houses. Nobody would come over just because I'd fear of, you know, who they'd see, fear of judgment. A lot of that fear was just early on. Like I, you know, just really, really struggled socially. You know, I played little youth sports here and there, and, you know, that got me out of my shell, but, it still wasn't enough. I went away to summer camp, you know, which got me out of the house for a bit. And, you know, that was kind of just the life that I was living. And I didn't know what the future would entail. Like, I just thought that was the life I was destined to live. And, moved into a different house, around middle school. And, you know, she still, you know, hadn't changed at that point. And it all just kind of like accumulated. Like, I wasn't a good student in middle school. Like I, you know, got by the skin of my teeth. And, you know, they'd always like my grandparents were like very involved. Like also they knew what was going on. My dad knew what, you know, knew like the house, you know, the house situation. And, what kind of was a blessing in disguise was, you know, my mom, I think it was like around seventh grade, she got committed to Norristown State. And they talked about, you know, getting me out of the house. And, I was, I enrolled at a school up in Pennsburg, for 8th through 12th grade at that point. And, you know, I didn't hear much from my mom at that point. You know, my dad, and I, you know, we were very close. You know, I leaned on him a lot. You know, just hope that, like, looking forward to that day when I can leave. And, you know, the structure at the school was great. Like, I had that structure, like I said, that I didn't have at home. And, you know, I got involved in sports and making friends from all over. You know, there were international students, day students, all that. I lived at the school, except going home on summers and, you know, the same thing, the camp thing. And, you know, I was still, like, I got exposed to alcohol, you know, and drugs early on, like around like sophomore year. But at that point, like, I really just sweared off any of it just because, like, you know, at that point, like, I saw the effect that it had on my mom. Like, I just had that vivid memory of, like, what it brought out of her. So, like, I didn't put myself, you know, like, basically I was, like, practicing those people, places, things early on. I just didn't know, like, you know, looking back. But, you know, I did well in school, and basically, that same camp that I went to as a kid, I started working at, that was up in the Poconos. And, you know, I knew college was approaching, and, you know, I don't know what clicked, but it was like right about junior, senior year, you know, I knew college was on the horizon. And that's when I, you know, something clicked, and like, I wanted to have that experience. You know, I saw what drinking and drugs, you know, this, like, I just saw the social aspect of it, you know, and that's what drew me in. And, you know, I left out, you know, I had experimented in other things like early on, but, not drinking yet. And, the summer before my freshman year of college, you know, they're pretty lax up in the Poconos when it comes to, letting people into bars. I think I was like 17 or 18. Yeah. And, I had a friend's fake ID, said I was 28. You know, I memorized all the facts, had it all prepared, looked nothing like the photo, but, they let me in, and I was just like, you know, stressing on the way over. And, you know, that friend of mine invited me over for a shot. And, you know, I just like what people talk about, like, that's like, I felt that unease, the shoulders loosen, you know, I could relax. And it didn't stop there. I had more and I had more. And, you know, by the end of the night, you know, I'm grinning ear to ear, I'm having fun, I'm laughing, I'm joking around, and like, I couldn't get enough. And I saw why people loved it. And, you know, that carried on throughout the summer and picked up into my freshman year of college. You know, what started on, as weekly, you know, binges, carried over into the week. And then by the end of my freshman year, I was on academic probation. School fell by the wayside. All that structure, routine that I like looked forward to so much, you know, growing up, you know, that was gone. And I like left to my own. You know, I'm reckless. I'm irresponsible. You know, I have no direction. I went back to that, you know, that same camp. You know, I couldn't even lie to my parents. Like, the letter got sent home before I even came home from college. So, you know, I already knew at that point that they were starting to worry, but, you know, I was just so focused on just doing everything for me. And, I met somebody, my sophomore year, broke up before. We had met at that camp that I was working at, and, we broke up shortly before. And, you know, it was a real nice day, and, it was like May or June, and, I decided, you know, I had been drinking that day, and I, decided to go out for a drive. The funny thing was, we were living in East Norton at the time, and, the apartment that I lived at with my dad, I moved in with him sophomore year of high school. The police station was practically in the backyard. I started seeing lights tailing me probably like a couple miles away, and like, me being who I thought, yeah, just, I thought that if I got home free, that it was like, you know, it's like tag, like, you know, you make it home, you're good. I got pulled over, in front of the entrance to the complex. And they towed my car. I was pissed. But I had to go pick that up. I towed it all the way to Bluebell, and, You know, that's when it really just started to, like, I know, you know, that decline. You know, I didn't see the seriousness of what was happening, you know, at that time. And I really just chalked it up to, wrong place, wrong time. Everybody gets a DUI, you know, and, so that the weekend DUI classes, the mandatory AA meetings, that was my first experience in AA. I can't even call it an experience. Like, I did everything wrong that you were supposed to. I showed up right before the start of the meeting. I was the first one gone. It was with my customer, or the community service. I signed my own name towards the end, or I forged the name to get through that. I actually did have the form signed for the AA meetings, but, it didn't stop. You know, I made it through the ARD, you know, slap on the wrist. That's kind of part of my consequences, you know, part of my story. And, I carried over into camp and, towards the end of the summer, I was still like just dealing with a lot of like personal stuff that like I couldn't express. You know, it was just easier to forget with a drink and a drug. And, I came up with the great idea to, start drinking on the job towards the end of the summer because, you know, still going out every night. Every other night is when they would, you know, let us go out and, staying later and later at the bar, kind of closer to curfew. And, I that wasn't enough. So I started drinking. I started putting vodka in a water bottle and what started as beer, sneaking that started, you know, progressing in the vodka. And then towards the end of the summer, I find myself, called into the owner's office and, I was visibly drunk and, you know, he said, pack your bags. That was it. You know, this is like, I practically grew up there. I'd known him since I was 11. I was probably, about 22 at the time. And, again, same thing, you know, I had this vivid memory of him telling me the next day I went to go pick up my bags and, he said, you need to get help. I didn't want to hear it. You know, I'm like, oh, all right. Okay. The same thing, like my parents knew I was coming home. You know, I made up a lie why I got sent home. And the same, like it carried over in the year. It's just that snowball. At that point, like I started drinking, for effect. You know, it wasn't fun anymore. You know, I'd be drinking at parties and I felt like there was this like bubble around me that like socially, like I couldn't keep up. I just felt this unease in my skin. Leading up into the school year, again, kind of same situation. You know, I had a fraternity party. I got the genius idea to, I got hungry. And I drove down the street to a Sheetz. Headlights were out. That's pretty much the international way of saying, hey, look at me, I'm drunk. I got pulled over again. You know, it's the same, like fall of that year. Field sobriety test. At that point, I just, I put my hands behind my back and I said, like, I'm not, you got me. Like, and that was it. You know, it's funny, it just unlocks these memories because I just remember sitting there. This is already my second DUI at this point. I'm sitting there, and handcuffed to the desk. And at this point, I'm like, you know what? I really thought about a career in law enforcement. Talking to him, he's probably nuts, thinking I'm nuts. But, the same thing, just that the consequences and the path, I had to go to meetings. The same thing. I, would lose the license. There were bouts like where I would just be white knuckling and just staying dry during this time, like in between, just out of fear of like getting in trouble. But inside I was still just a mess of a person. At this point I graduated in 6 years by the skin of my teeth. And, I moved after college. We were living in East Norton. My dad moved up to my stepmom's in, Macungie. So I lived there for a bit. And then I started working in Lancaster, same office my dad was working at. And, it didn't stop there. I saw all the best and worst parts of Lancaster City. You know, believe it or not, there's a city over there. And, the same pattern, I wasn't learning my lessons and, drinking and driving and, just living this life of hell. just this decline, you know, I, at this point, like everything was just like my hygiene was falling by the wayside. Like I just remember like this like swollen feeling, like just like carrying like a lot around, just like, you know, just every, like nothing was like, I didn't have any importance. I didn't have any direction, anything like that. You know, I just felt like I was existing. You know, I was non-existent to my family. You know, it didn't stop there. After living in Lancaster for a bit, I moved to Doylestown in, 2016. And, you know, what's the same thing, you know, I found a bar that I would go to constantly. And like, I just still that unease of like socially, I remember the bartender mistaking me for somebody else and they already had a drink lined up, and just like fear of like any like judgment or like, you know, I didn't want to correct them. Like, I don't want to, you know, I just said, oh yeah. How you doing? You know, and like, we're catching up. He's thinking I'm, you know, somebody else. And, you know, I just sat there and I drank and I, you know, later nights, kind of closer to work, I used to play this game where I would look at my phone and I would, say, all right, if I get to bed by now, I can be like somewhat functional by the time I wake up and get to work. And, you know, wouldn't be as obvious. And, I lived that way for a while until the bars again just got me too much. And then that's when I started drinking by myself. I just remember like towards the end, it was just very dark. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror. I was wearing a lot of the same clothes again, like just living a shell of a life. And, November 2nd of 2017, I was out drinking one night and, in town, and, I got pulled over. My headlight was out, you know, again, wrong place, wrong time, bad luck. it's nuts. I drive by there and I just like, I remember, you know, like it was yesterday. That was that moment when I, you know, I don't know what it was. But I was so desperate. I was done. Like I felt terrible. I was sick of just like letting everybody down. I was non-existent. Like I would come up with excuses at this point not to go to like family functions or anything like that. They're probably thinking like, how often is this kid sick? Like, you know, or like, how often is like something coming up, or like, you know, just make excuses not to show up. And, after that third DUI, you know, at this point, like, after every time I would get in trouble, I would call my dad. I'd call him the next day at, you know, leaving a drunk tank or something and say, it happened again. I don't know. You know, I had no answers. And, you know, at that point, like, I knew I was out of excuses. You know, they'd probably like given that hope, like that, like maybe this is going to be the time, you know, maybe after the first, maybe after the second, maybe there, you know, there's a chance that he'll turn this around. And, you know, all those apologies, you know, I was out of excuses. You know, I couldn't even, after it happened, I remember, I was working in Hatfield at the time, and, I couldn't call him, you know, and I called my brother-in-law. He was the person I turned to, and I said, I can't do this anymore. This is what happened. I don't know what to do. He's not in the program. You know, he just somebody, you know, separated from the situation, still family. He suggested me, one, to get in touch with this lawyer. Just so you know, after you get more DUIs, like the lawyer costs just like go up depending on, you know, who you want to get. You know, learn that lesson. But, a week later, I checked into a rehab up near Reading. I'd done that dance before. Like, I'd been that good student in the outpatient groups and stuff like that. I'd done all the worksheets and, you know, like said, this is what I'm going to do different this time. And I did all the comparison, to other people. Like, I'm not like them. And, you know, I didn't see the similarities. Yeah, this time was different. I, you know, just so broken emotionally. You know, I remember lying on my intake because I didn't want to make it seem as bad as I was. You know, they'd ask you all those questions like, how often are you drinking? And all that. And, you know, I couldn't face reality. I couldn't face the facts, but like, I knew I wanted to stop. Emotionally, like, I was numb at this point. I couldn't look in the mirror, like physically. I could not look in the mirror at myself, like knowing the damage I was doing. And about a couple weeks into rehab, that's when I really like felt a corner turning. And, all the outpatient stuff, like I knew I had to go and separate myself from this. And, that's why I decided to go inpatient. And, second week, like I started picking up that momentum. You know what I mean? Like I started like feeling a little better. I didn't have that same like Groundhog Day feeling in these four white walls, waking up and, just, you really got that momentum. And I listened for the first time in a while. They told me when I got out to get to a meeting that night, begin a 90 and 90, get your hand up and, say that you're new. And, so I did that. After I had been working at this time and, I got honest with them too. So that's like all this stuff. I just, the gig was up at this point. So I got honest with work and, they supported me throughout the way. And, so I started my 90-90 up in my parents in Mukunji, got involved, just started making meetings around there. And then a couple weeks later, I moved back. I was living in Doylestown at the time. And, I found, my first home group was the Chalfont Sunday night meeting, 7:30 speaker meeting. And, I walked in and, if you've been there lately, it wasn't as big as it is now. There were probably four tables. When I got in there and, those people just welcomed me with open arms and, just told me to keep coming back. And, for the first time, I felt accepted and belonged. And, at this point, I facing those consequences and, I got sentenced, in May. I did a little bit of jail time and the rest on house arrest. And, at this point I was only allowed to go to two meetings a week. One of the meetings was a big book study in Doylestown. And, the other one was the Sunday night Chalfont meeting. And, thank God for the people that gave me rides during that time. And, I saw the power of those rides and then like also just to ask for help, like, it got me, really like the same way I asked for help, when I wanted to get sober, the same, were the people, offering to give rides. And, I just, when I got off house arrest, that's when that Chalfont group got me involved. And, after they found out how long I've been sober at that point. And, without asking, I was made the intergroup rep. And, I couldn't drive at the time, but I still had to find a way to get to those monthly meetings. And I did that. And, that momentum just kept going. And, asking more rides and people willing. And I started going to different meetings. I was going up to Dublin on Thursday night and, going down to Philly and just all over and all around. And that's what I did. Long conversations with amazing people that I met, that would offer up rides. And then, eventually I got my driving privileges restored and, and I was the one giving rides. That's just that momentum, I met the people at the North Wales group, the same thing, and those people at Chalfont, the people at Dublin, they just kept it simple. Like they told me sobriety has to be the most important thing in your life. Throughout my sobriety, I've learned that I cannot prioritize other things over my sobriety. Like it has to be the most important thing because I'm not able to take care of anything out there if I don't take care of myself in here. And it did take, some trial and error throughout my sobriety, to know that. And, I stayed plugged in, I stayed involved and, talking to others and maintain service. And, again, AA just got a hold of me. I stopped looking for the differences and I started hearing the similarities of people. And, about a few years in, I started to get a little stagnant. I got the things back. I was driving again and, that was pretty, I got the bracelet off and, you know, felt like a new person. But then like other things became more important and I suffered, you know, I wasn't making as many meetings and, you know, I felt it. But you know, what my sponsor told me early on, you know, is that, and it sticks, is like, you never have to get back on the boat if you never get off. And I remember that now. You know, again, like I couldn't hear these things because, you know, again, I wasn't listening. Like, I don't hear the things if I'm not showing up to meetings. And, you know, COVID hit and, you know, didn't have a lot of options. And, that same group that I knew from that North Wales group, you know, because all that was there, you know, was Zoom or meeting, you know, outside. And, we started meeting every day, on Zoom, and then eventually found a meeting in the park down in Windmore. So I would drive there. So, you know, at what lengths are you willing to stay sober? So I was willing to drive 40 minutes from where I was living, you know, to hear a message and to be with people that, you know, that I know. Basically like around again, that stagnant feeling that like hit me around that time. I felt missing. And, you know, I was at the Chalfont meeting and, there was a group that was talking about, there was an ice cream social coming up for the, Bucks County. They were bidding at this time for PensiPa. It's a state conference of young people in AA. And, you know, again, like, just like I was always told, you know, say yes to AA, whether it's giving somebody a ride, whether it's sharing, whether it's speaking, whether it's making coffee, greeting, you know, what name it. And, you know, I took a chance and I went to this event and, you know, I saw these people hooting and hollering and having fun being sober at the same time. And, you know, they told me about the state conference at the time when it was in Lancaster. And, again, like saying yes, just taking a chance, I went and, you know, it was just an amazing experience. Like I saw a side of AA that I didn't know was out there. That fire got lit again. I got involved. That bidding turned into hosting, and now we're hosting a state conference in July in Bucks County and in Langhorne, and, which has been an amazing experience to be a part and just to actually like be a part of to carry it out. And, you know, just like being sober, the longer I've been staying sober and, you know, it just afforded me the opportunity by just saying yes and just trying new things. Like I've been able to see other parts and travel. You know, I met somebody in the program and we're able to share those memories and those things together and do sober activities. And, you know, just all this stuff. Like I'm so grateful for, you know, I was playing the tape back on the ride up here. I had about an hour drive from work. And, you know, it's just so hard to like, you know, you just get all these memories and just to put it into words, but it just comes back to like a state of gratitude. And, I moved from Doylestown to Conshohocken about a couple of years ago. And, you know, what I was told by my sponsor is, you know, make those decisions based around AA. So I still kept those core meetings that I went to, and, I know I'm jumping around, but, you know, just to go back shortly after I got off of house arrest, and, you know, I did all the things when they came out too. Leaving out getting a sponsor. I got a sponsor, and we went through the steps and, you know, did all the rings and, you know, it really just opened up to like just how close-minded I was to like my effect on other people and, you know, made those amends and, you know, just tried to be of service the best way I could. You know, it's always been that AA has been the most important thing in my life. And, you know, struggling for that time, putting other things first. Like I suffered and like, you know, I'd hear like the first thing that takes people out is they start missing meetings. And, you know, luckily since that, you know, I didn't pick up, but like, again, going through that dry period, you know, hopping right back on, you know, I haven't had that feeling again. You know, I do those simple things today. You know, I talk to my sponsor every day. Regular attendance in meetings, praying morning and night. You know, I just did all those things that people told me to. You know, that's it. Like I stopped trying to figure this thing out. I tried everything to do differently. You know, I saw the consequences. I saw the effect that it had on, had on other people. And, you know, I was taught to stay in AA and not around, as well. I'd hear that first step is the most important. And, you know, I always come back to that first step. You know, as time passed, I made those, you know, decisions, you know, people, places, things, you know, avoid it. And then, that simpleness, just makes this person who overthinks it's just that easy. And, you know, today, like I can't put in words, like, you know, I see the power of the we, you know, like I can't do this alone. And you know, I'm just so grateful for the people that have showed me. Cause it really is an amazing life. I'm able to show up to things, you know, now I can, you know, be an employer, an employee. I can be present for my family. Throughout this time, I had a tumultuous relationship with my mom. And, you know, at this point I avoided any contact. Any time she would try to like peek her head back into my life, I'd dismiss it right away because it was easier just not to feel those feelings. But like, that's the power of this program is that, you know, 33 years, of just suppressing and suppressing and suppressing, like over this past year, you know, with the help of my sponsor and the people in the program. You know, I've come to accept that, you know, who she is now, you know, she may never change. You know, excusing like the things of the past, I'm able to have regular contact with her again. You know, I never thought that day would come. Cause, you know, it's just such a source of, you know, there's a lot of drinking and to forget what it was like then and to forget about that relationship. And, you know, that's another thing that I'm just indebted to this program. You know, I'm grateful to be up here and to be asked to speak. You know, I think I've gone on long enough. That's all I got.